Hi, everybody. I'm your host, Emily Steckenborn, and you're listening to one of Asia's top F&B podcasts, Bottled in China. This is the podcast that dives into the delicious and fascinating world of food and beverage. We cover innovation, market trends, and culture with thought leaders from around the world. Katrina Axelson is the founder and CEO of Tastry, a sensory science company that uses advanced chemistry, machine learning, and artificial intelligence to match consumers to products that they will love. So Katrina was actually working in a custom crush facility and noticed that one of the batches of wine with two different labels received drastically different industry scores. And that's when she knew that there had to be more of a science-based way to score wine. Thus, Tastry was born. Over the next 3 years, she taught a computer how to taste. Today, we're going to dive into that and so much more. But before we get started, don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Bottled in China, where you can connect with me directly, or subscribe on iTunes to make sure you don't miss any great podcasts coming out each week. Let's get started. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Bottled in China. Today, I'm excited to speak a little bit more about artificial intelligence and wine. They actually go hand in hand, something that we don't always think of. But Katrina, welcome to Bottled in China.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Now, you're the founder and CEO of Tastry, and we're going to be talking about how a computer tastes wine. So can you tell us a little bit about that, how you actually taught a computer to taste wine?
Yeah, sure. So the short answer is money, world-class scientists, and time. But simply put, we realized that to do this, we needed to decode what we call the flavor matrix in order to teach a computer how to taste. And that is to say, we needed to understand how the various compounds and groups of compounds in a wine are combined to express a set of sensory characteristics. And that's what we call flavor, and that's how the human palate identifies flavor. So the concepts are, before starting Tastry, I felt that the top companies and researchers in the world who were studying how consumers perceive flavor, they were trying to solve the wrong problem. Every researcher I talked to and every research paper I read was focused on, does this one compound express, for example, the taste of cherry? Do consumers, perceive this as tasting like cherry? And there's two problems with this approach. The first one is individual compounds rarely exist in nature. So it's hard to tell how it will be perceived among all the other compounds you're experiencing at one time. And wine has many, many of them. So I'll give an example. Benzaldehyde, it's one of the several compounds in red wine that produces a cherry flavor. And every red wine has this compound. But not every red wine tastes like cherry. Well, why is that? We found it's because of the presence or absence of the hundreds of other compounds that allow benzaldehyde to be master expressed. So, most Pinots, for example, are described as having cherry flavors, but it's not because of benzaldehyde. It's because there are fewer competing compounds that allow for you to perceive it. And then the second problem we saw was that even if you could solve that first problem, and agree that consumers will perceive as something, for example, tasting like cherry, there's no guarantee or way to determine whether or not you would like it. So I can say I like cherry, but there's 10,000 types of cherry flavors. So our focus at Tastry was not on identifying compounds, but for using our AI to identify what combinations of hundreds of compounds in a bottle of wine are responsible for you liking it or, disliking it. So in short, we taught a computer how to taste by using a unique chemistry methodology to look at the whole picture of the wine, not just a particular compound.
Mm-hmm. Actually, for anybody listening, I feel like sometimes we forget that wine is really so much more of it's actually technology and science, right? And a lot of the time, especially as consumers, we look at that and we think it's all about the romance of it. But actually, there is a lot of science that goes in it. when you're making wine and even in viticulture. So to think that it's not at the point where we, you know, integrate this in the sense of tasting, I think is something that we were always missing in the wine industry.
Yeah, I would also add in science, there's a lot of artistic things you could embed into it too.
Right. That's true. Now, I want to talk a little bit about Tastry when you did the CompU blend, and this is more of the blending technology. Can you tell us how wineries can use this data to identify wines that really will perform best in market? Because that's really one of the struggles that everybody has, is how their wine, once it's finished, is, you know, goes into the market, and also how it's perceived by judges and also consumers. And if consumers like the wine, then hopefully they can buy it again. So can you tell us a little bit more about that technology and that side of it?
Yeah, definitely. I'll start with computational blending, which is one of the things we're able to do because we taught a computer how to taste. So computational blending does two things. First, it helps the winery make the most out of the wine they have available for blending. And then it gives the winemaker greater latitude to be more creative with their brand. So what we essentially do is we will test a winery's samples available for blending and run it through our AI, and then compute what ratios of each wine are going to produce the best results in the market. So you know, you can make a wine for any given audience, right? You might want to make the best wine online, for example, or for a major city or a particular demographic or within a certain price point, or even to have a certain score in the market. And it's a novel concept for the wine industry, for sure. And we have received a lot of questions. So my favorite thing to do is just to kind of show some of the use cases that we have out there. So, for example, we had a very large wine company approach us, and they understandably wanted us to prove that it works. So what we did is we designed an efficacy test, and they sent us 125 unmarked bottles of wine. So we had no idea what we were testing, and our objective was to test the chemistry and tell them the aggregate consumer score out of 5 stars in the market. So we tested the wine, we gave our predictions, they provided the results, and we ended up predicting every single one within a tenth of a point. And they were blown away by that, but then they said, okay, so you can test the wine and predict the future. How do you change the outcome, though? So then we took it one step further, and that's how computational blending started. So we took a wine that was getting 3.6 out of 5 stars in the market, so, you know, so, and we were only allowed to modify 25% of the blend. So we provided our blending recommendations and ended up increasing the score of that wine to 3.96 out of 5 stars, which increased its value by 207%. And at that point, we had to turn down acquisition overtures. And then the last one, just 20 seconds, there was another case study with a very large winery where we computationally blended one of their 200 labels. And it was tested against 2 blind tasting panels against the winemaker's blends. It had outperformed the winemaker's blends in both cases, even according to the winemaker. And at that point, we realized that this technology was not just about connecting consumers to products they will love and helping wineries make better wine and understand their market. It was also about efficiency for the winery. So we provided our results within 48 hours, whereas they went through 6 to 8 weeks of tasting trials.
Oh, wow. Talking about that, how is it actually a game changer for wineries? And most importantly, what are possibilities that are kind of constraints with working with Tastry?
Yeah. So in addition to computational blending, which not everyone has to do, we can help a winemaker target the palates of their existing consumers or find consumers that will love the wine that they're already making. So we figured this out because our first product ever was a Tastry-powered wine recommender in the market, and consumers would engage with Tastry by taking what we call a palate profile or quiz. I'm sure you've seen similar things out there. And then we used that to match the palate of the consumer to the wines available in the store. And what we noticed was that people's palates are incredibly unique and granular. They're very different. So your particular palate is like a fingerprint, and we see that. So the odds that you're drinking your favorite possible wine are pretty slim. compared to, you know, all the wine available out there. So the good news for wineries is that we know that their brand is a screaming eagle for someone out there. And they just need help finding and connecting to those customers. So, you know, especially for the smaller artisan brands out there, they found Tastry empowering, I would say, because we're essentially leveling the playing field for them against the larger brands, you know, who have endless exposure and marketing budgets. And, you know, as soon as a consumer buys into the Tastry recommender, they're more likely to discover their brand.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I just want to ask a little bit more about the entire way of choosing a wine that you like. In terms of people who are going on and taking the quiz, what type of questions in that quiz would you have? Because, like you said, wine is so unique to everybody and everybody's taste is very different. So what are some of the questions you might ask in that quiz to figure out their taste preferences?
Yeah, so we have a pool of hundreds of questions and we only ask you about 10, depending on depending on the inventory that you're matching to or what store you're in. But we ask you things that aren't wine related. So how do you like black coffee or dark chocolate or butter? It takes about 20 seconds.
Mm-hmm. Right. I see that they do that in France as well, I think with Petit Ballon. And it's really fascinating because they're very simple questions, but they help a lot to understand what is your taste preference. And a lot of wineries don't even take the time when you go to, you know, the cellar door and you talk to them, right? So it's these really simple questions that allow you to figure out the consumer's preference and I think help them choose a better wine or choose something that they might enjoy.
Yeah, I just really want to add to that because there are companies out there who have, you know, similar, you know, they're kind of whimsical looking quizzes. We all have them and they're on various websites and apps. But I've been pretty strong about saying that Tastry is unique in this sense, because when we ask, you know, do you like the smell of fresh cut grass or how do you feel about black olives? What our AI is actually doing is understanding the flavors and aromas and then using those insights to better understand which compounds and what ratios you will like. So the chemistry component is unique, I would say, and it gives us a lot more useful information to work with. So, for example, what we're not doing is we're not filtering wine recommendations by tasting notes or zoning in on a particular wine style. It's the world of wine is way more complex than that. So, you know, let's say you're doing a tasting note filter quiz, you can bin customers into maybe 9 wine styles or 9 flavor profiles. You know, I would say you're kind of stuck there, but with our method, I mean, to date, we've identified a minimum of 119,000 unique palate profiles. So it's more granular, and because of that, we're able to cover a lot more wine and kind of vertically integrate into the industry and help everyone in the supply chain, including consumers.
Right. Actually, I think it definitely is different because what I was referring to previously, I have a feeling that when they ask about butter and toast, they're asking about specific flavors in Chardonnay, for example. So I don't think it was really in the chemistry side of it all. And it was just more of an engagement or maybe even reassurance for customers that they were trying to find the right fit. So definitely for you guys, it's a lot more science-based. And I think that that's probably even more accurate, if not allows the consumer to have more trust in choosing wines with you guys. Very interesting.
I totally agree with you, and that reassurance is something that wine consumers definitely need nowadays with all the options available to them.
Right. Well, talking about tasting, I want to talk a little bit about virtual tasting of the technology. And can you tell us a little bit how that works in the goal of increasing total sales for wineries?
Yeah, so what we're doing is we're reducing the frustration of the consumer in the wine aisle and the likelihood of a consumer purchasing a wine that they don't like, and that's a bad experience that isn't good for anyone, not for the consumer or the retailer or the distributor or the winery. So our primary job is to ensure that a customer doesn't have a bad experience when buying a wine, because that leads to intimidation and frustration, especially, you know, for casual wine drinkers who are just starting to explore what the world of wine has to offer. So we know that consumers who buy wine that Tastry recommends, they score the wines on average 45% higher, which means that they're discovering wines that they wouldn't have otherwise. So that benefits the winery because of the exposure. It benefits the retailer because their customers are happier with their purchase and they know what they should be stocking to keep their customers happy. And it helps the distributor know where products should be going and where people are actually going to like them.
Right. Now, I want to talk about tasting wine and judging, because that's actually one of the reasons that you got into tastery, if I'm not mistaken, is seeing that there was a lot of inconsistencies within wine judges and their scores for sometimes the same wine. And I want to talk about that. How does tastery help out in a sense of judging wines more accurately?
So I do think it's time for, you know, a scoring system of the future that, you know, still offers an element of personalization that people have, you know, come to expect in almost all areas of their life now. I would say it's more tailored to you. You know, there are wine experts who have a specific palate and people identify with that and follow them. But I think especially with the young generation, they're not as familiar with those influencers, I would call them. So I think there's definitely room there. And as far as, you know, maybe working with wine professionals or sommeliers, I can't speak too much to that because we haven't often engaged with them. But I would say I haven't found it to be adversarial. I personally know several sommeliers who love tastery, and actually they've had their customers take the palate profile or quiz, but then they still talk to them about what occasion is the wine for, what kind of wine styles are they looking for, is it a gift, you know, what's for dinner, that sort of thing. So there's definitely still demand for that human element.
Another thing that I think is really interesting that you guys talk about is actually identifying smoke taint. This is something that I saw recently, even on your Instagram, and you guys are doing quite a lot of discussions around that, because right now in California, I mean, it's such a difficult time, and wildfires in California, even Australia, has been an issue for the past few years. Can you tell us about how you guys are supporting wine growers assess damage by different aroma and smoke taints right now happening?
Sure. Yeah, thank you for that. It has been a difficult time for everyone. So we have a pretty advanced lab and advanced chemists, and, you know, providing testing for typical smoke taint indicators like, you know, guaiacol and 4-methyl guaiacol was a relatively simple thing for us to do. And, you know, something we felt compelled to do. You know, there's only a few labs in the U.S. who can do this test, and very quickly they're inundated and turning people away. Their wait time is too long for any of that data to be actionable. So everyone's panicking because, you know, there's millions of dollars at stake and growers are losing their contracts and, you know, people need to know, are they picking or processing the fruit or what? So what we decided to do was step in and help the wine industry during this difficult time, and we repurposed a part of our lab and a part of our staff, and we delayed other business initiatives and services. ETS now lists us on their website as an alternative lab for smoke taint testing, so we're inundated now as well, but we're currently providing smoke taint testing, you know, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and it's also good because it's building awareness about other things we can do to help wineries.
Oh, for sure. And for anybody listening, I think if we can just maybe talk one quick minute about what is smoke taint, because probably some listeners are new to that or a little bit unsure about the entire idea of smoke taint. Do you mind just giving a little bit more info about that?
Oh, geez, I'll try. So because of all the fires, I would say crops can get tainted with this compound that sits on the grapes that when processed produces, I would say, in those levels, an unpleasant flavor and aroma in the wine. And there's a lot of contracts that growers have, for example, that stipulate that you cannot have that compound above a certain level if you want your grapes to be purchased, because they know that the wine won't be of a good enough quality to be in the market. So you don't want to have smoke taint, but it's very difficult to know how much you have because there's, you know, chemistry at work. So what you're required to do is have your wine tested to know, is your contract still on? Can you make wine from millions of dollars of fruit? What are you going to do? How are you going to make a decision? That's really to the extent I can speak about. I'm sure my chemist could do a much better job.
Oh, no worries. No, I think that's really important because a lot of people have a lot of questions about smoke taint, especially right now with the wildfires in California. And it is actually, it does translate, I guess, in an aroma of, we call it you know, like a cigarette, almost like a cigarette aroma, right? So in that idea, it's also negative for the consumer if you are making wine out of it. And as you mentioned, it's very difficult to tell if you do get smoke taint just because there's a fire in the region. You know, typically if it's not 10 to 15 kilometers radius, then you don't have an issue, but it's very difficult to tell. So as you just mentioned, Katarina, it's very important for people to go test it, and also for growers, because that's how they know if they can even sell their fruit or make wine, because if there is high amounts of smoke taint, then they won't even go pick. So right now it's a really crucial time for the wine industry to decide what they do with the situation. And as you mentioned, it's not an easy decision, and you really need technology and chemistry to be able to make this accurate decision, because it's a financial decision at the end of the day.
Yeah, there's a lot of investment on the table, and we're pretty sympathetic to that. It's sad to see so many people panicking. But the good news is I think you can have small amounts and it actually produces a beneficial flavor and aroma. You just need to know what that level is. And I think understanding the flavor matrix is also key to that.
Mm-hmm, for sure. And of course, my last question as always is, how can we get in touch with you? How can we find out more about Tastetree?
Yeah, you can reach out to us on tastetree.com. It's spelled like pastry, but with a T.
I'll make sure to put that in the show notes so anybody can just go over and check it out and click the link. But it has been absolutely fantastic speaking with you. I think you guys definitely have a game changer. And what's exciting is that hopefully anybody who does purchase wine is now purchasing better wine thanks to you guys. And wine that they love. That's what we actually want, wine that they love.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Of course. Cheers.
Cheers.
Hey, everybody. Thanks so much for listening to today's episode. If you love this podcast, make sure to share it with a friend or click 5 stars on iTunes to show your support.